that. We're going to get started here. Representative Wolgamott, would you like to move the meetings from minutes from our last meeting?
So moved.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we've got a reasonably short agenda here today. And, oh, look at that. The first bill up is one of mine. No, I'll start with mine first. We will turn the gavel over to Representative Wolgamott, and I will go to the testifiers table.
All right, Chair Considine moves to lay over House File 2010. Chair Considine, please present your bill.
This is the correctional officer's bill that deals with disciplinary rights. We did hear it last year, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. I will go probably directly to my testifiers. I would say that the motion was to lay it over, because there have been a couple of things now, again, that I feel like we're going to have to work out that I thought were okay. One of them was actually a provision that I added. So that part's my fault. I will start. Who wants to start?
I'll start.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gus Fromke. I am with Teamsters Local 320. We represent 24 sheriff's departments, corrections officers. We're back for round two in the 91st. The reason we're here today is because there's a disparity between discipline in the statute between law enforcement officers and corrections officers. Law enforcement discipline in the statute is far more generous to law enforcement officers than to correction officers. And as we've seen in the last couple of years, corrections officers are also on the front lines. Corrections officers are also in the line. So we really want to see that those disparities get corrected, that we have parity between law enforcement officers and corrections officers. And also, the way the bill is written today, it does not include state corrections, so it would only cover folks that work for sheriff's departments or local joint powers. Who are corrections officers. I'm going to turn over the testimony to a correctional officer from Ramsey County.
Good morning. I'm Brett Onsted. I'm a correctional officer here in Ramsey County. I'm also a steward with Local 320. One of the things I'd like to talk to you today about is the problems that we have with correctional officers, in that we're dealing with very difficult people on a daily basis. And one of the few powers that they have is to point the finger at an officer and say, that officer did this, that officer did that. A police officer, if they're accused of doing something, they have the right to know what is happening, to be able to defend themselves properly. A correctional officer may not know what he's being accused of until he's sitting in front of someone who's going to judge him. I, as a steward, have to sit in on plenty of these meetings. They're usually not found to be true, but it is a very nerve-wracking and demeaning way of taking an officer down. When they go into one of these discipline hearings, it's a scary moment, because you don't know if your job is on the line for something, and you don't have a chance to prepare for testimony, to testify, to know what you're even accused of before you go in for that discipline hearing. I'm hoping that we'll move this forward and help protect our officers who are out there. I'd like to say on the street, but we're not on the street. We're behind the bars with these inmates, and I hope that we can protect them.
Thank you, members. Do we have any questions for Chair Considine or our testifiers this morning? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to point out that we have a new member. And he, if we could just have him say hello, and then I have a quick question.
Okay, Representative Navanti.
Hello, my name is Paul Navadny. I'm the representative from 30A. I represent Elk River, Big Lake Township, and part of Otsego. 32 going on 33 next week, years of law enforcement, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Representative Novotny, and welcome to the Corrections Subcommittee. We're glad to have you serve with us. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, Chair Considine, if you could just lay out just a couple of the points that you're changing in this bill that now makes it on par with other law enforcement agencies.
Basically, everything that's in this is already in their contract, and so we're just codifying it. But the one part, and frankly, it was something that I asked them to include, was that when there is, they are initiating a investigation, that they do let their collective bargaining unit know that this is happening. The person can still say, I don't want to have somebody in there with me, but at least they will have a contact if they feel like they need it. But again, almost everything that's in there right now is already in the contract. The part that has given me some pause, and the reason I'm laying it over, is the there's been some questions about the data privacy. And so I want to make sure that we have that in the correct working order before we move forward. But like I said, it's just about what's in their contract and has been for some time.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Considine. And you had mentioned that this does not cover the corrections officers in our state prisons. Is there, can you just let the committee know why that would be, why you're not including them as well?
I'm actually in favor of doing so, yes. Have talked to the AFSCME representative about doing so.
Great. Yeah, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Considine, Chair Considine. So is it more an issue with the unions agreeing, or I guess I'm not quite sure why we wouldn't include them. Is there some compelling?
The original intent was to include all corrections officers, as the statutes for law enforcement officers were general between whether they worked for the state or worked for the local city or a sheriff's department. AFSCME, we wanted to mirror the statute between the law enforcement and corrections. The law enforcement statute that's currently written allows for an attorney to be involved in the process. AFSCME, Council 5 did not want an attorney involved in the process. So they wanted to make sure that their AFSCME corrections officers were not included in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Fromke. And I just want to remind our testifiers to please communicate for the chair, for the record, that was Mr. Gus Fromke. Yep.
Mr. Chair, that brings me another question, if I may.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the indulgence. I'm sorry, but I just feel that's a bit concerning that the union would not want a lawyer present. You know, here's the thing. So our corrections officers in the state prisons are enduring incredible hardship. When Officer Gom was brutally murdered and then Officer Parisi died from a heart attack, it sent a ripple through the corrections system as a whole. Every part of the correction system is incredibly stressed. I keep in pretty close contact with the folks, and they're at their breaking point. They are absolutely beyond what they can bear. I don't know how they bear it now. I've heard stories of corrections officers, particularly in Stillwater, where the epicenter was, that are working 16 hours on 3 and 4 hour sleep. And they're doing this day after day after day after day. Something has to change. I have a really hard time with the union saying, oh, well, we don't, you know, say if they have an issue, whether it was founded or unfounded, after they worked a 16-hour day and 3 hours sleep, to not have a lawyer present to represent them, that seems incredibly unfair. We have already asked them to do the impossible, and they're doing it. So I would urge you, Chair Considine, please. I don't know how this needs to be resolved, but I certainly think that a corrections officer absolutely should have a lawyer present if he's accused of something. These poor officers have endured enough. We need to have a greater conversation of how do we as a legislature help them through this incredibly horrible time. And maybe, Chair Considine, we can have an entire hearing just about what's happening right now after Officer Graham was brutally murdered and they're working these horrible shifts. I would ask you if we could do that, because I think it's time, and I don't know how much more they can bear. But they certainly should have a lawyer present if they're accused of something after enduring all of that. So please, if there's any way to push them in the direction of doing what's right for the best and what's best for their officers, I really would like for them to do that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. And Chair Considine.
Thank you, if I can address that real quickly. I share your concerns, and that was part of the discussion last year. It was that what it kind of came down to was that the union representation, if there were a potential for criminal charges, they would certainly get a lawyer immediately. It was more in the, they were looking at more of the internal discipline things, minor infractions, that they didn't want to be bringing a lawyer in every single time. So, but they are definitely, if there is a opportunity for criminal charges, then they would advise the person to get an attorney. So, but I'm willing to continue that conversation. So,
thank you, Chair. Thank you. And members, next week we will be having a joint hearing on that OLA report. Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have a question for you regarding how discipline may differ between different areas. So if a local jurisdiction has a more robust disciplinary responses or less robust, how will this affect how locals decide to, if they want to go further than what is included in here in your bill or what is recommended for correction officers, how will this bill affect that ability to do so?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Frappi.
So basically, just from the Teamster perspective, we have 24 what we call white paper contracts with sheriff's departments. The discipline, we try to standardize it across, but it's not always standardized. What this would do was it would ensure a standard, a statewide standard. Through all our 24, and then of course there's, you know, 87 counties. Not all 87 counties have jail staff. Some use other jails. You know, the smaller counties use some of the bigger jails, and then some of them are joint powers. And but this would definitely create a standard that we would be very in favor of, of course. And then discipline is subject to collective bargaining. So even if there is a standard in statute, it would not stop a sheriff's department and a labor union from negotiating a better deal for discipline.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any further questions? Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Considine or any of the testifiers, how many of these cases of discipline or discipline hearings are there in a year? Approximately.
Mr.
Is this a very frequent thing or a rare thing?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Frumke.
Representative, this is, I would say we probably, on average, probably have about a dozen discipline cases a year on average, and that's within our 24 white paper contract jurisdiction. What we see again is in the last couple of years we've seen just you know, some things that really put in perspective of how we protect our officers, And we saw the disparity between law enforcement officers and corrections officers and discipline. And our corrections officers don't feel it's fair, and we definitely agree with that.
Okay. Representative Poston.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just one other question. Are the union representatives trained in any fashion to legally help these officers that go through this discipline process? Are union leaders trained at all? Maybe we can.
Chair Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having been a union steward at one time in my career, you are trained in the provisions of the contract. So, and again, going back to what Representative O'Neill was talking about, once you're beyond that, that's when you need to bring in some help. Okay. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Onstad.
As a steward, I probably go in with a fellow officer probably 12 times a year. A lot of the things that they're disciplined for and looked at are relatively minor, which may result in maybe a day loss of work, a day loss of pay. Maybe it's just moving from post to post to avoid being with a certain inmate. But that's how the inmates will control officers, by making these claims. And that's kind of the problem, is that I'm not trained officially, other than I understand my contract. I also understand human nature, having a background in child psych, to know what's going on, to be able to defend a person, and to look at the evidence that's presented. Sometimes it is just an inmate making a claim and management is just following up on it. However, the problem that we have is that the officer often doesn't know that they're being investigated until they're brought into the office. And that's the scary part for the officer, is that affects their ability to do their job if they fear that retribution from an inmate to make a false claim, for which there is no retribution back to the inmate. The inmate can make as many claims as they want, and it typically does not go against the inmate. It's their right to be able to do that. I understand that, but it's nice for the officer to be able to go in and understand what he's being accused of, so he or she can say, okay, I know what happened on that day. I can look at my records and say, you know what, I wasn't even in the building on that day.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. I'm assuming that these disciplinary hearings, the 12 that you go into a year, those could be an inmate making an acquisition accusation, excuse me, or it could be something like tardiness, right? It could be anything, you know, that they could be disciplined for. Are the majority of them for things like attendance and so on, or are the majority of them inmates making accusations?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Onstad.
The 12 that I speak of are more along lines of an inmate making an accusation. Tardiness, that even though I may stand in with the officer with that, I'm not including those in the numbers that I'm including. It usually that's dealt with pretty informally.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Members, any further questions for Chair Considine or our testifiers? Okay. Chair Considine, any last words?
No, just appreciate the feedback, and we will try to get that data privacy part squared away as quickly as possible so that we can move forward and get something for the state correctional officers also.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So once you get that resolved, then will we be hearing that in the Judicial Civil Law Data Practices Committee?
I believe that's what we have to do.
Chair Considine.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, yes. As it deals with data privacy, I'm pretty sure that Chair Lesh would insist on that.
Anything
further?
I'm sure he would too. So thank you for making sure that that's the path.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Okay, and to clarify, Chair Constantine moves to re-refer House File 2010 to the General Register. The chair lays over House File 2010.
Lay it over. Let me restate it. My motion is to lay it over so that we can work out these.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. The chair lays over House File 2010.
Representative Johnson. Excuse me, Chair Johnson. You can proceed.
Chair Constantine, I'm hoping that you will do the motion for where this bill is going, and also I do have an amendment.
Representative Motley, would you like to move Chair Johnson's bill for him?
Yes, I would.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Constantine, Representative Novotny. This bill is frustrating that I'm actually have to be here to deal with this bill. I wish we didn't have to. This bill deals with the unfortunate increase, and it's looking like a huge increase of assaults of our corrections officers. In 2013, when I was first term down here, I was astonished to know the number was 92, which is up quite a bit from the previous years before that. In 2014, we cracked the 100 mark of assaults on our corrections officers. Back then, Commissioner Roy did a couple things, and it dropped. It dropped to 98, then 81. 2017, we went to 113. Then came 2018, we had 188. We got a new administration, and I asked, one of the things I asked, not only when I was working with Commissioner Roy, but they had been contacted by the new commissioner, Commissioner Schnell, who happens to be here today. One of the first questions I asked, what is the plan to stop the assaults on our staff? It needs to stop. 2019, we had 156. And these are not numbers January to December. These are fiscal years, July to the end of June. For those of you who don't know, the first half of this biennium, we've had 104. The way we're going, we're going to go over 200 assaults on our staff. And I'm turning into the mama bear that's protecting our cubs. This is getting out of hand. It's getting very serious. Talking to corrections officers, it's just a few inside the prison system that are causing these issues. The vast majority of our inmates are there doing what they're supposed to do. They understand the consequences of what they did. They're doing their time. But it's a small percentage that are that are not following the rules, not doing what they're supposed to do and assaulting our staff. When this first bill was written, it was written because of the incident I saw on TV, on the news. They showed the video of an inmate coming out of the, I believe if I correctly, it was coming out of the work area. Goes through the metal detector, takes two steps, turns around and violently attacks one of our corrections officers. He was found guilty in court. The court system sentenced him. And also, when he sentenced him, it was concurrent. His sentence was shorter than the time he had left to serve in prison. So what was the actual consequences for assaulting our staff? Zero. Nothing. The inmates knew that. That's why our numbers are up. Now, when I drafted this bill, I wanted to get it set up so if somebody attacks our staff, they lose their good time. But since that time, we've learned that we haven't actually had good time since 1993, and we still have 23 people incarcerated under the old system prior to August 1st of 93. So I have an amendment to fix that issue, which is in the second part of the chair. You could have somebody move the amendment, the A1 amendment.
I'll move the amendment.
Okay. This amendment fixes that issue.
We need to vote on it, don't we? We got any discussion about the amendment? You want to explain it first?
This amendment fixes the issue in the second half for those who were sentenced after August 1st, 1993. What this does, if you assault our staff, instead of doing the current system we have where you have two-thirds of your time incarcerated, one-third of your time on probation. This amendment makes it so you actually have to execute your entire time. If you're not going to behave in prison, you're not going to behave on the streets. If you're not going to behave on the streets, you put the safety of the citizens of Minnesota at risk. There also is another bill that's coming. I believe it's Representative Hurtaz that deals with the other issue that I'm a little upset about, is making that if they're convicted of assault or any crime or of assault and crimes in prison, yet the sentence has to be consecutive and not concurrent. But that's another bill I'm hoping to hear this year. What this does is, and I know there's some issues, some people thinking, should we make the inmate execute a sentence or not. But we need to do something because these assaults have to quit. Like I said earlier, the vast majority of inmates are no problem. It's a small percentage that I'm trying to get to so they don't assault our staff. And with me today to talk about what's going on in the prisons is unfortunately, former and medically discharged and retired corrections officer Randy Gust. He was one of the first people that got to the scene of corrections officers GOM. And that incident alone has been very hard on Mr. Gust, but he wants to talk about what's happening with the assaults in the prison. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Gust.
Mr. Guest, state your name for the record, please, and good to see you again.
Thanks. Randy Gust, G-U-S-T. This is very hard for me. I was there the day Joe was murdered, and I was up there. All I heard on the changed me. I don't even feel like a human being anymore. I heard on the radio, he's got a hammer. He's got a hammer. They're barricading the door. They're barricading the door. I ran there as hard as I could. As hard as I could. Joe Gunn was a good guy. He was a good officer and a good guy, man. I ran there as hard as I could. I ran up to the shop. There he is laying. I mean, I'm not going to get into the graphics, but there he was. There he was. I used to say in the morning, me and Joe would walk by each other. I'd say, what's up, Joe Gum? He'd say, what's up, Randy Gust? When I went up there, it was total mayhem, total mayhem. You know? And yet I still had to do my job because we didn't know who did it. We didn't know who did it. There's inmates all over the place. Still, even with Joe Lee in there, people tried to help him. I thought, man, just make it, buddy, just make it, because I thought I'd seen his, thought I'd seen his feet moving. It's just... But we're trying to, we don't know what's going on, so we're lining up the inmates. Well, Joe's still there, laying on the ground. And, you know, because we don't know how many people are involved. We don't know who else is involved. We don't know if anybody else, staff or inmate, is laying on the ground. And we have to do our job. We have to do our job. You know, I'm not here to blame anybody. I'm just saying, at that time, it was one officer doing one-man rounds with all the, just the offenders and a foreman. It was just one officer, you know? And really, just been lucky for so many years out in industry, you know? That shop where Joe was murdered in was a welding and paint shop where you gave these guys hammers. You gave them welders. You gave them all kinds of tools, you know? And it was just one officer doing the rounds. And that officer, or that offender, Johnson, that day, Joe Gomm was one of the good officers. He didn't poke the dog with these guys. Joe Gomm was one of the good officers, and he didn't poke. It was just he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And he, that was my shop before Joe's shop. I worked in that shop. I really believe, I wish it would have been me. But it's just, I mean, it wasn't a safe environment. You know, it was production over inmate, I mean, over a prison. It was production over a prison. These guys were here because they're, committed crimes, not to work for MinCorp. But it was, MinCorp's a for-profit business. And you had to have these guys out to make the product. And, you know, and it just, that day was just a bad, bad, tragic day in the Department of Corrections. Like I said, I'm not blaming anybody, but I'm just saying it was a bad, bad, tragic day. That could have been one of your family. Could have been one of your family. I just remember, I mean, back to the going to Joe's funeral, and there's his mom just sitting there, and I just kept staring at her. I just kept staring at her. See, what did I do? This has changed me. It's changed me. I'm not the same person. I had to leave on a line of duty disability. I couldn't do it, and I liked my job. I was there for almost 20 years. I liked it. I liked the people, you know, I worked with. They're good people. They work hard. They work hard, you know. And I believe administration tries as best as they can, but it's just such a tough, tough animal. Such a tough, tough animal. And Stillwater's, it's a whole different breed, you know? Such big open movement. And I just don't want this to happen to anybody else. I don't want this to happen to anybody else. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Officer Gust, we are so sorry. We hear you. I've been in Stillwater multiple times. I know what you're talking about. I've been in MinCorps. I was in MinCorps just before that happened. We are feverishly trying to figure out how to make sure this kind of thing never, ever happens again, and we can't do that without your testimony. So thank you for your bravery and your resolve and what you just shared with us. It impacts us to the core. You need to know that. We are here as a subcommittee specifically to fix these problems, to get to the root of what's happening. And we can't do that without knowing exactly what it is. So your story, as painful as it was incredibly important for us to hear. I know there's more to the story because I've heard it from other officers personally. There's a lot more to be said. I know there was great hesitation on that particular day to even open up MinCorps because of the lack of support, the lack of personnel. And there was a decision to do it anyway, just as you described, profits over safety. I hope to God that that decision is never made again. And I think we stand together to say, we do not want a decision like that made again. So on behalf of the House of Representatives and the legislature, I think we collectively will say we don't want that to ever happen again. So now we need to problem solve and figure out how to absolutely make sure that each and every officer is safe. They go home to their families. They have enough support where they have a response team that's a full team ready to respond, that you have a full team. I know he was there by himself. That you have a full team there. That you don't put somebody that has already threatened other officers in MinCorps. My God, why would you do that? Why would we put somebody who has already threatened other officers in a place with hammers? It makes absolutely no sense to me. We are here to fix the various issues that you just raised and things that you didn't raise that I'm fully aware of. This particular bill is one step in that direction, and I am shocked to see the escalation in assaults. What I don't know is how many of them are within Stillwater, or like how, like which of the 11 sites is the worst problem. You know, we have Oak Park Heights for a reason, and I'm pretty sure that that particular inmate probably needed to be there and not at Stillwater. Just as you said, with open movement, I gotta tell you, all of the prisons I've been in, yeah, been in every single one except Togo. When I was in Stillwater, that was the only place that I felt afraid for my safety because there were so many inmates coming through these large hallways, as you say, just a huge flow of people. Each of the pods, the units, I'm not sure what you call them, but 250 in each with four officers at the desk. And it's designed so you can't hardly see what's happening on the upper levels. Five, they're stacked five high. It was designed and built in 1905, and I think it's not a very safe place to be. That's how I felt when I was there. I felt like I wasn't safe there. So this particular bill is at least a step in the right direction. We have a lot of steps to go. So I just want you to know that we are with you, that we stand with you, that we are heartbroken as you are heartbroken. I was there at Officer Gom's memorial service a year later, and we were absolutely heartbroken with you, and we're here to fix it. So please stick with us. I know it's hard. I know it's painful, but your voice is invaluable. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much.
I think Representative O'Neill covered most of the points I wanted to make. Just thank you for coming and sharing your story. I know that was incredibly hard. So, okay. Any other questions? Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for your testimony. You and I have talked, I know, before, and I feel it. I feel the pain. I also see where the problems lie. And, the problems in our prisons right now are bigger than just this one bill, that's for sure. And a lot of it just has to do with clientele, with bodies, having more folks in the prisons. I would like to ask Representative Johnson, would this bill have lengthened the time for murder in prison? Or if, under current statute, if that person could be convicted to serve time?
Representative Johnson.
Chair Constein, Representative Christensen. If a person is sentenced to 6 years, they do 4 years and 2 years probation, or they can execute their sentence, which would be the full 6 years. What this bill does, if you assault staff and are convicted in court, you lose that 2 years probation, you execute your entire sentence. I've talked to the corrections officers, and most of the ones that come back for technical violations are the ones that are causing problems in the prisons. If they're not behaving in prison, are they going to behave on the streets and endanger our public? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Or are they better off executing their entire sentence and spending the entire sentence in prison? I don't like doing that. I know our probation system works for the vast majority, but there's some it does not work. And if they're going to assault the staff, it's probably not going to work.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you. And I just want to say how sorry I am. The Stillwater Prison and the Oak Park Prison is in my district. And so this affects our collective family, our collective village. And thank you so much for everything you've done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Johnson, you kind of touched on one of the problems that I'm seeing here, and that is you mentioned a six-year sentence where they would then get 2 years. That would not seem to be commensurate with somebody in a serious assault or murder. If you had somebody that had a 15-year sentence and had a bad day and shoved an officer, that would be a 5-year add-on. If you had somebody that had a 3-year sentence and they gave an officer a concussion, you might then have a 1-year add-on. I'm having some trouble with that equity. The other part of that, too, as they alluded to, is that I kind of want to have somebody looking out at these people when they leave. So if they execute their entire sentence, then they walk out the prison door and they don't have any supervision whatsoever. I really like where you're coming from. I like the idea. As I understand Representative Hertaus's bill, with the consecutive over concurrent sentences, that might give us a chance to have a weigh in and have a more equitable result. But if I got my teeth knocked out and the guy ended up with an additional year where somebody else might end up with five, I don't think I'd be real happy about that. So let's continue to work on this bill. But those are a couple of things that I'm having trouble with. And frankly, I'm the Representative Hertaus's bill with the consecutive sentences really does appeal to me. Your heart's in the right place, and again, I believe I am the only person here that has family working in the prisons right now, and so officer safety is at least as important to me as it is anybody else in this room. Commissioner Snell, did you have some comments? Oh, go ahead.
Chair Constantine, I understand where you're coming from, but one thing that in this bill, they also have to be convicted of the assault. A vast majority of the assaults, what I'm hearing from staff, is they're handled internally. They're not, they don't go to court for them. In, it's more serious ones that are going to court. If you knock your teeth out, that's great bodily harm. That's a second degree assault. That's another felony. Should that be handled internally or through the courts? That should be handled through the courts.
I agree.
Which would be a another sentence on top of that. And that's where the Representative Hertaus bill is the second part of this. They'd have to spend that time, and then they'd have the probation on top of that once they get finished that sentence. So, but we have to do something to stop the assaults. If they're looking, if they're in the prison system, they're looking at guaranteed extra time because they assault. They're going to extend their sentence by one-third. I think a lot of them will think twice about doing it. And if it stops one serious assault on our staff that could end up like Joseph Gom, I want that done. Now, you talked about you have family. Every one of those corrections officers is my family. When Joseph Gom was killed, when I went to the funeral, I was really surprised because I hadn't seen somebody there who was a pallbearer in a number of years because he's a Port St. Lucie peace officer. He was one of the Joe Gom's best friends, which is my sister-in-law's brother. So we all have family in there.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies for being late. I had the misfortune of locking my key in my car when I stopped for coffee this morning. on this issue, I was up at Stillwater last year and spent some time with correction officers, and was one of the most painful interactions I've ever experienced in my many years here, just seeing the grief and the sense of loss among the fellow officers there after Officer Gom was killed. But relative to what we just heard from Representative Johnson in terms of, you know, your intention and the bill before us, and I actually don't know the answer to this, whatever happened to the person who assaulted Correction Officer Gom? Was he, relative to, you know, charges faced, consequences, et cetera, how did the system respond to the assailant? And whoever has the answer to that.
We're going to hear from Commissioner Snell in a minute, and I okay. probably think. Representative Johnson, sorry,
I
see your finger.
What I found out today from Mr. Gust is that, I won't say his name because I refuse to, but that individual is sitting in Washington County Jail at this time. I believe he's waiting to go to trial for the homicide.
So,
Representative Mariani.
So, Mr. Chair, Officer Gom, I'm sorry, the assailant is currently facing charges Okay.
Anything else? Commissioner Snell, did you have some comments you wish to make?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. First of all, I want to just thank Officer Gus for his service and apologize for the challenge that he and certainly others who were there that day and work in our facilities and some of the challenges that they face. There's a couple of things that I think just need to be brought into to light. I think, first of all, a statute was created some years ago, 609.2232, which does require consecutive sentences for state prison inmates who engage in the conduct that is established in the provision being brought forward by Representative Johnson. And while, you know, I believe that it's critically important that we hold people accountable for their conduct while they're in, I also think that we have to really think about the range of conduct that can happen when we talk about staff assault. A staff assault obviously can run the gamut, and while no assault on our staff is acceptable, we can have somebody who, as a for instance, spits on an officer, and let's just say that it ends up on their pant leg. That would, in terms of the conduct, be considered an assault on a staff person. And that also would be an assault if they received that spit in their face. And that would also comprise criminal conduct, which could be charged. So as we look at some of these issues, I think we have to consider the continuum of the conduct, which is what the disciplinary process inside the facilities attempt to do. I think as the chair mentioned, if we begin to think about proportionality around some of the response to this, I think we should be concerned about making sure that there is some period of supervision when that person is released. But we have to remember also that under the provision, if they were convicted, they would serve that sentence consecutive. If somebody, let's say that they were serving a 12-year sentence, and in their seventh year they shoved an officer for whatever reason, were charged with a misdemeanor assault, they would serve out the remaining 5 years of that sentence, plus whatever sentence they were convicted of in that misdemeanor time. That misdemeanor sentence would be served in state prison, which statute I mentioned before would require the service of whatever sentence the court imposed consecutive to their original committing offense in prison. So I think the question is one of proportionality, and that's one of the things that the discipline process attempts to address in the course of this. I certainly don't have any issue with holding these folks accountable, but I think we need to think about the continuum and the best way to do that to ensure that there is a level of proportionality. I would also say that you know, while I would love to do whatever it took to stop assaults on staff, and certainly stopping assaults on staff is a complex issue. It's complex in the sense of we need staff to cover, to address conduct, to keep safety and security at the forefront. But we also need to have programming to keep people from being idle. We also need to be in a situation where there needs to be levels of activity for people to participate, recreation, contact with family, all those things. And I think every correctional officer, I think, knows the complexity of all the things that need to be balanced in order to create environments that are more safe for staff. I would just also say that I want to raise that as we look at the population of who's committing these assaults, Release violators do create a lot of churn within our facilities, but they themselves are not, the data does not bear out the fact that they are responsible for the majority of staff assaults. The churn that results from release violators in their short periods of confinement create a sense of disorder in the facilities, which certainly doesn't help. But they themselves are not the source of these assaults at high rates. So I just want to be clear about that. I share this committee's interest in doing whatever we can to do that. I guess I question. We look at some of the conduct that happens, some of these assaults that occur, and ultimately, while I think the deterrent effect is something that's important, data does not necessarily support that deterrence will stop behavior. And this is always one of the struggles. How do we create a level of accountability? But we have to recognize that simply extending time will not ultimately stop the behavior. And I think as we look at policy, I think we need to think about the range of complexity that ultimately creates safer environments for our staff. And one of them certainly is holding people accountable for their behavior.
Get right to you, Representative Mariani. I'd like to express some concerns. Again, anecdotally, I have heard that there are not many of the assault cases being prosecuted and that there are still some that are being run concurrent rather than consecutive. Could we get some data on that? And I guess I'd like to know where the threshold is for referring them for prosecution. You're right. If somebody gets spit on the leg, that's a waste of the court's, in my opinion, time. But if somebody's getting assaulted and there's bodily harm, I would like to see that, again, I'm speaking just personally, that person prosecuted, and I would like to see the current law that you just referenced being enforced. Because, again, anecdotally, I'm told that there are still sentences that are coming back concurrent. Again, you mentioned data. The more we can get and the more that we... Yeah, when I'm saying anecdotally, that's a little embarrassing because it's nice to have the true facts. That's what I'm being told. And also, as I mentioned to you recently, though, about your point about programming, I just heard from one of the prisons a while back that they are, because of shortages, sometimes canceling visiting, sometimes canceling programming, sometimes canceling employment. And this is from staff, that they consider that to be a dangerous situation because people without hope or without some direction are much more dangerous. So just appreciate that. Representative Mariani, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, because the officer's name was evoked earlier, the tragic outcome of us losing a public servant. What I'm understanding is, and I want to make sure that publicly that there isn't a message that's coming out of here that person, the assailant, is not being held accountable. It seems to me like right now the system is working insofar as holding him accountable. What I heard is that he's being held in a pretrial situation. What is he being charged with? And if he's convicted, which I assume he will be, is under current law, is he going to serve whatever punishment comes out of that consecutively or concurrently to his current punishment? And what is he in jail for, or prison in the first place?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Chair Mariani, he has been charged with murder. That case is pending. He is serving a life sentence on a previous case, which I believe he is subject to the availability of parole. Convicted of the crime which he's currently accused related to Officer Gom is a life sentence without the possibility of parole.
Very well. And Mr. Chair and Commissioner Snell, I don't think there's anyone here who doesn't feel incredibly saddened and hurt by what happened to our correction officer. But it does seem to me, Chair, that with the bill before us, by using that example, we're talking about obviously a very important incident, but an outlier here. I suspect, based on your testimony, Commissioner, that there is a broad range of activities that would now fall under the definition of this legislation, which I think may result in it being much harder for you and people who precede you to be able to manage our prisons in such a way, taking away the kind of flexibility there in such a way that enhances the safety of our correction officers and everyone else in the prison. I think that's essentially what you just testified to. Is that correct?
Commissioner. Mr. Chair, Chair Mariani, yeah, I think what we need to do is make sure that, when it's appropriate, certainly there can be today, a person can lose what would happen as part of the disciplinary process. There can be imposed extended incarceration. Extended incarceration is essentially a portion of their supervised release time can be taken. So they're going to serve a longer period of time in the facility. And then on top of that, convicted of one of the crimes as referenced in Representative Johnson's bill, and if the statute is applied, they would serve that consecutive to the period of incarceration plus whatever extended incarceration term was imposed. But not extended incarceration would not invoke or involve the entire period of supervised release in most cases.
Well, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, you have a very difficult job. A number of us have visited our facilities. They can be pretty tense, pretty stressful. Trying to get the right mix, it seems to me, Mr. Chair, in terms of how we hold people accountable at the same time that we're creating the safest environment, is a very difficult job. And I would hope that this legislature would not attempt to micromanage any commissioner's ability to balance that tension, with your professional staff and the residents of our facilities.
Chair Johnson, you had a comment you wish to make?
Chair Constantine, I understand where Commissioner Snell is coming from. The particular case involving Officer Gom is an outlier. Happened to be a person that was doing life, but he did have an opportunity at parole or probation. And what's even more frustrating to me now is I always thought there was a statute that sentences could not be concurrent, but it had to be consecutively, as Commissioner Snell mentioned as well. I'd like to get the judges up here as well to find out why they're not following that statute. If that is in statute, because they're violating statute. It's frustrating to me. I do not want to micromanage how the department handles their stuff. But when I look at these numbers, what's happening is not working. If it's not working, that's when we, as a legislator, need to step in and say, get it right. Because I'm the mama bear, and those are my cubs, and I'm going to protect them.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, we've heard several times in the last few minutes about staff shortages. Could you give us an update on staffing?
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Mr. Poston. Please, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poston, yes, we have made significant progress by way of hiring. We've continued to have significant challenges as it relates to retention, and that's for a host of reasons. Part of that is retaining people that are newer hired, the people that are within that first 1 to 1.5 years. We've had high numbers of losses, and then we just have a higher number of retirements, also just the aging of our workforce in general. And so we've largely hired about, I think it's since July 1, don't quote me on the exact number, but this is very close, 168 since July 1st. And we've had approximately that same number leave service, maybe slightly less than that, in that period of time as well. So we've seen an uptick in our ability to do recruitment and try and bring people in. But we've struggled on the retention side, and I think that's for a host of reasons. Some of that, the overtime issues that Representative O'Neill pointed out, and some of that is we recently have the contract recently got settled, which we hope will help and made our pay a little bit more, gave us a little bit more parity with what's happening at the county level, and so we think that will assist in some of this recruitment and retention as we go forward. But certainly addressing some of the range of issues that this committee is talking about today, creating a stronger and more positive work environment for our staff, which ultimately I think also affects and benefits the people we incarcerate and ultimately want when they come out, to be come out in the best way possible. Ultimately, I think if we can achieve all these things, and I think we're making significant efforts to address the range of issues that we face, it will be easier. And yet, I think it's going to be a process.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. I'm glad to hear that hiring is on an uptick, but can you tell us how many folks are you short? 10? 50, do you know the number?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, right now we are short about 140 officers. So we, maybe slightly less than that, but it's approximately that number. This includes some of the additional officers that were granted by the legislature in our biennial budget, which ultimately resulted in the creation of security posts. 128, as I'm told. So it's 128 is the exact number, but resulted in the creation of posts, which ultimately we staff because of the allocation of those FTEs to the facilities.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first thing I want to point out is what happened with Officer Gom was under a different administration, and I know Commissioner Schnell, we have worked together very, very well moving forward and problem solving, and I just wanted to point that out, that there's a new sheriff in town, so to speak. So I think that we are making strides in that direction. I do have a question though for the author. I just was pulled out my statute book, because you know me, and looking at the what level assaults, because we do want to, if we're going to make a change, it should be for the bad actors, and kind of distinguish that out. And so I went all the way down to 609.224, which is assault in the fifth degree. And let me just read a couple lines from this, just for your consideration, because maybe we don't want to go that far down. All right, so let me just read it. So, commits an act with the intent to cause fear in another of immediate bodily harm or death. So, you know, they didn't actually, so it's threats, okay? So they didn't actually lay a hand on anyone. So I'm not sure that that's the correct kind of parity where we want. So my suggestion is maybe we could do, an amendment. We haven't adopted your amendment too, so that's another thing I want to bring up. We haven't actually adopted your amendment, but maybe in consideration moving forward, just to revisit which statutes you're referencing, which assaults are there, so that we really do get at the crux of the violent offenses in prison, so that that can be dealt with. But I just wanted to point that out, that that particular statute references something that is not actually a laying hands on someone kind of assault. And we do need to adopt the amendment too, Mr. Chair, at some point. We didn't vote yet.
But we did.
We didn't actually vote.
Okay. Well, your response?
Chair Constein, Representative Marion, or Representative O'Neill. It's been a long morning here. I agree. We need to have it done right. I am more than willing to work with you or anybody on this. This is designed to be a deterrent so our staff is not assaulted. We need to do it right. Like I say, I don't want to micromanage the department. The commissioner overall does a very good job, but when you look at the numbers, what's going on is not working. And that's where, as a legislature, we need to step in. But we need to do the proper deterrent the right way. And I agree with that. But I think we need to step down a lot of back our officers there and our staff, because they are an important part of our public safety continuum.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thank you. I'm hearing that you're willing to take another look, open up your statute book, and make sure that you are getting to what you intended, which we all agree with. We want to make sure that if an officer is assaulted, that there are consequences. But I just think that maybe that statute's just a little bit too broad. So thank you for being willing to take a second look at it. Thank you. Yeah. Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Constantine and Commissioner Schnell. I'd just like to say that as Chair Johnson has pointed out several times, it is a small portion of the predatory prisoners that we deal with. Speaking from, you know, my interactions at the county level, you know, there's been several times that inmates have been the only thing that saved much more serious injuries in assaults. That being said, I've heard several times, you know, being fair and wanting to be proportionate with the sentences. My experience has been that the predatory inmates and prisoners are very calculating, and being fair is part of the problem. We need to be disproportionate in our response so that there is an incentive for them to not assault the officers. Calculating is the only word I could use to describe their mindsets. So we need to have, as I said, a disproportionate response to bad behavior.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your comments. And I really appreciate the one, too, because there were a couple of times when in the jail setting where, yeah, actually it was offenders that jumped in and helped. So we need to keep in mind there's a lot of decent people that have made mistakes. I think the key, though, again, going back to what Commissioner Stelis has said, is we need some more data. And particularly before I ask the judges to come in and explain themselves, because, again, I've heard the same things, but it's all anecdotal. And before I'm going to take on a judge, I want to have some solid data behind it. So I'm the author will be okay with laying this over. That's what my intention is at this point. Just try to see if we can tweak it. Oh, we need to do the amendment first. I'm sorry. All those in favor of the amendment? I thought I did that already. I guess I didn't. All right. I will move the amendment. It's fairly, do you have anything you want to say about it?
I think we've discussed it rather lengthy.
Thank you. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. And then same, anybody opposed? Same sign? The motion prevails, and the chair will lay over House File 2010. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I believe there was one individual.
Oh, I'm sorry. Public testimony, yes.
Public testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Please, public testimony, come on down. Change his mind?
Change his mind.
Okay, all right. No other business before the committee? We are adjourned.